there any public comment? Hearing none, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. And we do not have a quorum today, so those will be tabled to our next meeting. And item number four is a microtransit feasibility study update from Tyler.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. Can you all hear me in the room?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. Gonna share my screen here. All right. Well, it's good to be back with you all today. We are the Kimley Horn team that is supporting CSBDC with the microtransit feasibility study. My name is Tyler Badoon. I'm the project manager. It's Kimley Horn. Worked with Devin and the PDC team on several different transit planning and technology related initiatives over the past few years. So happy to be back with you all today. And I'm joined by a couple of my colleagues, Poonam and Zadie, if you all want to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Poonam Patel, also Kimley Horn. I have been working in the transit planning space, and specifically with my microtransit, for a few years now, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts and our recommendations.
Hi, I'm Zadie. I work on the transit team here at Kimley Horn in Richmond, and this is one of my first exposures to working on microtransit, so I'm excited to hear your feedback as well.
So today we've got an overview of where we're at in the study. So we are presenting with you all back in November where we introduced it. So we'll get everyone up to speed with what's progressed since then, summarize some of our analysis and evaluation that we've been working on the past few months, and then talk about some of the opportunity zones or areas that we're recommending for consideration for microtransit, and open it up for any discussion and comments, questions that you all may have after we get through our presentation. So, as I mentioned, our initial presentation to BTAC was in November, where we kicked off the study, shared a bit about our scope. So there's a couple different parts of this study. First was identifying goals for this type of service. We then went through quite a bit of data analysis and identified areas that are most suitable for this type of on-demand service. Recently, we've been working with the PDC to look at different delivery models and evaluating those different approaches to contracting and providing service, and are finalizing our service plan recommendations, which we'll focus on today. So coming up over the next about 2 months or so, we'll be finalizing the study. Any feedback from today we'll take into consideration, and then be back with you all at a future meeting for a final presentation. So a refresher on microtransit for those that may be less familiar with it. It is a form of on-demand public transportation. It's similar to traditional service like demand response or paratransit, with a few key differences. It's generally open to the general public, so there's no eligibility requirements to use this type of service. It is on-demand, so customers would make a ride request or book a trip in real time, and a vehicle assigned to their zone that they're wanting to travel in would be dispatched to them. It's technology enabled, so there's often an app component as well as call-in options for requesting a ride, and it's viewed as more flexible compared to maybe services that have to be scheduled a day in advance, or fixed routes and fixed schedules that may not align with people's travel needs. There's often a zone or an area where trips must start and end within, and we'll see examples of that today, and often is run with smaller vehicles than full-size buses, which are used on fixed routes. So easier to navigate maybe streets or areas that are hard to serve with traditional means of transit. Customers can also share their rides with others, so, and that's kind of an expectation to group rides together for people that may be traveling at a similar time in similar direction. So I will pass to Zadie to share a bit more on what went into our analysis and identification of zones and suitable areas.
Great, thank you. So in identifying our zones, First, I'm going to define what that is. So a microtransit opportunity zone is an area that's well suited for microtransit and has the potential to address specific needs. So to identify these, we looked at several different factors. First, we looked at where transit potential was in the area, which is kind of where the density of residents and jobs are found, and we made sure we were targeting areas that have enough demand to support transit, but we made sure to exclude areas where high-capacity bus service was probably the best option. Next, we looked at where transit NEPAs in the area, which is where there are high concentrations of people who are likely to rely on transit if it was offered. So to do this, we looked at census data, demographic data, access to personal vehicles per household data, et cetera. And third, we looked at the performance of the existing bus service, and we identified areas where the current service is unproductive and where microtransit might be more suitable. We also looked at areas where microtransit could help get riders to current bus stops. Lastly, we looked at the travel patterns to understand where people are currently traveling to and where the needs outside of the current fixed route service are in Augusta County. So the first part that I focused on, this map shows transit potential, which is the concentration of people and jobs, it's shown in blue. And transit need, which is the concentration of people likely to use transit, which is shown in orange. The areas where there are darker shades of blue represent greater transit potential concentration, and areas where there are darker shades of orange represent greater transit need concentration. The areas that are outlined in black show the most optimal places for microtransit. These areas have a lower density of people and jobs and a higher need. Some of these areas you can see on the map, I think, the next slide may show a little bit of a closer inset. Would be areas in Verona, Fishersville, Stewart's Draft, kind of like the outlying portions of Stanton and Winsboro. I think I'd like to talk about the existing freight service performance, unless there's anything you'd like to add, Tyler.
No, I think that's good for transit potential and need. And we'll circle back if there's any specific questions on our analysis in the Q&A portion. So just invite you to hold any of those to the end.
Perfect.
All right, service performance. Is that what you're on, Sadie?
Yes, thanks. So the next thing that we looked at was the current service performance of the Bright bus routes to try to understand where there are kind of lower performing areas that might be better suited for microtransit. At most, microtransit typically carries between 4 to 5 passengers per hour per vehicle, and this rate would be similar to routes found in red or yellow in the map. The least productive routes tend to be longer distance routes and more rural routes. This would be similar to the Stewart's Draft Link, the BRCC Shuttle, and or the Afton Express. The Stewart's Draft Link is a good example for a microtransit replacement candidate, and for these reasons, and the BRCC Shuttle and the Afton Express routes are longer distance routes, which are less suitable for replacement, but could probably benefit from microtransit as a supplement or a feeder to the fixed routes. And also the last thing we looked at was travel patterns. So we included both weekdays and Saturdays, and this map here represents trips made in travel modes, not just transit, in all travel modes, not just transit users, excuse me. You'll see that the darker the line is in blue, the more trips that occurred between those areas. Some of these high frequency trip connections included trips between Stanton and Waynesboro along the 250 corridor, trips between Stanton and Harrisonburg, and trips between Verona and Stanton, just to name a few. As we plan our zones, we looked at this data to be sure we were lining up with these travel patterns.
Thanks, Eddie. So using all of that analysis, as well as the input that we heard from this group at our first meeting, as well as the study's goals, we identified what we're calling opportunity zones. And as Zadie shared, these are areas that are best suited for this type of service or have the potential to address specific transportation needs. Typical zone sizes are roughly 5 to 25 square miles, so more of a community scale rather than like an entire county. This kind of equates to trips that are roughly 2 to 6 miles long. And microtransit often isn't the best option for very long distance trips, such as cross county, just because it becomes very costly to provide that real-time responsiveness to customer trip bookings within a reasonable wait time. So I think Devin shared with you all a similar map of our 7 opportunity zones. I'll just kind of briefly highlight those. One is shown in red. This is North Stanton and extends from the hub up north, through northern city limits and covering portions of Verona, Mount Sydney, and Weir's Cave. Another shown in dark red is the South Stanton zone that covers portions of southern portions of the city, south of Beverly Street, extending a bit into the county in a few places. Fishersville is shown in dark blue, Stewart's Draft in orange, Greenville zone is in light blue. The South Waynesboro zone in green extends from the southern neighborhoods of the city, including Walmart, Town Center, south along Lyndhurst Road and Mount Torrey Road, down to Sherando. And then finally, the North Waynesboro zone, shown in purple, covers residential portions of the city of Waynesboro, including industrial sites and some businesses there, and extends north through Dunes and Cremora. So these zones represent areas where microtransit trips would start or end within. For example, someone traveling in the North Stanton zone would need to start and end their trip within that area, or could take microtransit to what we call external nodes, which in this case could be the transit hub in Stanton. We'll show some examples of external nodes later on, but basically these represent nearby locations, hubs, shopping centers, things like that, where one end of the trip could be taken, in addition to allowing travel within each zone. So working from those 7 zones that we identified, we needed to prioritize them to identify which ones should advance further in the study. We used multiple criteria and tied these back to the 3 main study goals that were established for this study. That included looking at some of the mapping and data Zadie shared, prioritizing transit need and transit potential, looking at trip generators within each of the zones, the number of fixed route connections, trying to prioritize zones that have multiple options and multiple routes that could be connected to. We also wanted to prioritize areas not currently served by transit, so we looked at the square mileage of the zones that were outside of the existing service area. Kind of on the financial and kind of community side, we looked at relative costs between the zones, mentions by the public through previous planning efforts, the long-range transportation plan survey, or you all as stakeholders, and lastly, the productivity or performance of the current bus routes in the area, wanting to prioritize routes or areas that see lower performance with the hopes that microtransit could provide a more cost-effective mobility option. So going through that scoring and prioritization process, we landed at the following. In order of priority, we had the North Stanton zone as first, South Waynesboro, third was Fishersville, fourth was South Stanton, fifth was Stewart's Draft, sixth, North Waynesboro, and our lowest ranked zone was Greenville. So we worked with CSPDC and within the scope of our study to select a few of these zones to advance further into recommendations, and those are what we'll focus on for the remaining portion of our presentation. So those top priority zones that we selected were North Stanton, South Waynesboro, Fishersville, and Stewart's Draft. To be clear, all 7 of those original zones remain viable options to consider for microtransit in the future, but this short list represents the zones we would recommend to be considered first based on our analysis. And it's common for agencies to start with one zone or two with an initial pilot and then maybe expand to other areas if the service is successful. So we wanted to provide a variety of options and geographic coverage So we have a zone in Stanton, a zone in Waynesboro, and multiple within the county. And what this does is provide you all flexibility and the CSPDC flexibility to consider different options for service in the future after the study is completed. So for our remaining time, we're just going to zoom in to each of those four priority zones, share a few more details and about what's within those areas, potential connections, and our draft service plan. So the North Stanton zone, shown in red here, contains about 13,000 people and about 8,500 jobs. It would provide potential replacement or supplement to the BRCC shuttle. I don't think we'd be looking at a full replacement by any means, but we're looking at ways that this could potentially supplement that fixed route service. Connections would be available to that route, as well as all the routes that serve the Stanton hub. And there would be an external node where somebody could travel between this zone and the hub, or just travel within the zone. We've called out a few points of interest that represent anticipated locations where we could see some trip activity. That includes shopping locations like Food Lion, Dollar General, BRCC, the airport, Mill Place, Commerce Park, Augusta County Government Center, just to name a few. For each of these four zones, we're working through a draft service plan to help with ridership estimates and cost projections. We've got a few details on each zone that we'll share. This North Stanton zone is about 17 square miles. We are estimating about 95 to 135 riders per day. We've assumed service hours of 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. And for each zone, we've identified a target wait time. And what that is the time that a customer would need to wait at most after booking a trip. So for this zone, that would be 30 minutes. That compares to about the 60-minute frequency that BRCC and Stanton Loops and several of the Stanton services are available at. And this can vary by zone. We're projecting about 3 to 4 vehicles to be needed to serve this area at peak. And for each of these options have projected annual operating costs with some assumptions of hourly rate based on some data we've gotten from microtransit operators in Virginia. So this one's in the range of about $900,000 a year given the larger size and multiple vehicle need. The South Waynesboro zone, this is our second priority zone. It contains about 6,000 people, 3,000 jobs, would provide connections to Stewart's Draft Link, the 250 connector, Waynesboro Circulator, and Athens Express. It includes several points of interest, like the Waynesboro Town Center, Martin's Grocery Store, Walmart, and several future employment sites that are under development or will be developed in the future. It also extends down south to Sherando, extending quite a bit beyond the current service area that's provided today. It's about 7.6 square miles. We're projecting about 75 to 105 riders per day. All of these zones, you'll see, have the same assumed service hours. Those can be adjusted in the future, but they were set initially based on where we saw the most demand for service and considering the hours that the nearby bus routes operate at, trying to maximize connections between services. The target wait time for this one would be 25 minutes. Two vehicles would be needed and in the range of $500,000 to $600,000 for annual operating costs. Moving to our third, a fourth zones, Fishersville, nearly 5,000 people, about 4,700 jobs contained within it. We are looking at points of interest such as Food Lion, the Public Library, Augusta Health, Amazon Fulfillment Center, and WWRC, with connections to Stewart's Draft Link, 250 Connector, and Afton Express. It's a smaller zone, so about 6 square miles, would carry about 55 to 80 riders per day, with the target wait time of 20 minutes or less after booking a trip, and served by two vehicles. And then finally, Stewart's Draft Zone, shown in orange. This one covers about 5,000 people, 4,800 jobs. This one's unique compared to the other three in that we're recommending this as an option for replacement of the Stewart's Draft link. Connections would still be available to the other fixed routes in the area through these four external nodes. That's Waynesboro Walmart, the Town Center, Amazon, and Augusta Health. So a customer could travel within the zone itself or between the zone and one of those four points for their microtransit trip. The benefit of this zone is it does extend south into the community of Stewart's Draft quite a bit, more than what the current fixed route is able to provide today. And then a few details on this, about 9 square miles, 85 to 120 riders per day, a target wait time of 25 minutes or less after booking, and estimated 2 vehicles needed for the service. So all of those service plans that we've developed and assumptions gave us those ridership projections, estimated costs given the hours that we assumed. Costs are subject to kind of scaling as decisions are made of particular service hours, whether the service operates on weekdays or also Saturdays. But we've provided basically a menu of options for operating service in these four zones, either on weekdays and or Saturdays, to basically provide options coming out of the study for service that could be considered. So we'll have cost ranges, ridership ranges for all four zones, weekday and Saturday, included in our recommendations and final report. So next steps in the next few weeks, we are finalizing recommendations. We'll take any feedback from today into consideration. We're also looking at recommendations for their structure, payment options, vehicle types, different engagement and outreach strategies, which is very important if a service were to move forward, and potential funding sources. We'll then finalize our report and executive summary and return at a future BTOC meeting to present that all with you. So that concludes our presentation, but I'll open it up for any questions or comments.
So there will be a fare structure that offsets the cost that you showed in the fare, some of the costs.
Yes, so we'll come up with our recommended fare structure and fare level that would offset a portion of those costs. Additionally, like through the changes to fixed route, so in the Stewart's Draft case, changes or replacement of that route could help offset some of those costs. With the North Stanton changes to the BRCC, if that was pursued, could help offset some of those costs. So between fares, changes to fixed route, those are some options to help offset some of the costs that were shown.
And for the what's the tipping point between you keep the current service and you don't? So Stewart's Draft Link, you obviously said that would just be on demand or microtransit. But the whole BRCC run to the north, at what point would you have a decision that that would not be viable to continue the fixed route service?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on the demand that the microtransit service would see. As I think Sadie pointed out, microtransit often has a ceiling of how many riders you can carry per hour per vehicle. That's typically about 4 to 5. And so if you're anticipating demand above those levels, it becomes more costly to operate microtransit because you basically need to add an additional vehicle to keep up with your target wait time. So there's kind of that trade-off between customer wait time, cost, and what the vehicles and service can provide. So it's roughly around that, 5, maybe 6 passengers per hour. If your fixed route is performing better than that, it's likely that fixed route may be the most cost-effective option. But there are different variables you can weigh. Some agencies view microtransit as maybe a more premium or preferable service because of the responsiveness and kind of customer satisfaction. So it really comes down to what the agency or funding partners want to prioritize, whether that's cost efficiency, the customer service and feedback, responsiveness. There's kind of different trade-offs to consider.
So Tyler, I saw that all those were set hours. I know you kind of mentioned that it was based off of trying to hit all of the routes, but is 13 hours typical, or do you usually, I guess, does microtransit usually mirror fixed route times, or do you like to see it extend a little bit longer to catch a little bit more connectivity?
Yeah, again, that can vary. I think the preference is to try to mirror fixed route hours as much as possible to facilitate those transfers and connections. If somebody's needing to travel outside the zone, I think in the demand data we looked at, it kind of dropped off after about 7:30 p.m. So that's kind of why we set at least weekday from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Saturday was slightly different. I think that was an 11-hour window we assumed in these numbers from 7:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. But again, all of that, Devin, will be very interested in kind of getting feedback from you all. That can be kind of configured to better align with any preferences for service.
Okay.
And again, that's kind of another variable to control costs is hours of service. Obviously, the more hours run, the more vehicle hours and cost to operate that will be needed.
Any additional questions? Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you all. If there are any follow-up questions, feel free to get them to Devin or Danielle, and our team will take them under consideration as we're in the final stages of the study.
Yeah, what Danielle and I can do is send out the slide deck, so if you want to take in some extra time to review with certain staff or just review it yourself, and if you have additional comments or feedback, you can share them with us and we'll pass along to the team. Okay. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you.
And moving on to number five, fiscal year 2026 Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation grants update from Danielle.
Yes, the grant updates. So the FY26 grants were submitted prior to the February 1st deadline. The CSPDC made application for urban and rural operating and capital cost of contracting, a capital grant for bus shelters, technical assistance for the turnkey contract procurement, the commuter assistance program operating for rideshare, and project assistance for transit marketing, specifically for the Afton Express. And DRPT is currently reviewing applications, and the draft SIP should be available in April. Kyle can confirm this or not if he's there.
Afternoon, everyone. You nailed it on the head there, Danielle. So we're in the middle of doing our application reviews, so trying to work as hard and as fast as we can to kind of meet the deadlines with the SIP. But yes, yeah, we're kind of aiming for April for the draft SIP to be out there, and then finally it'll have to go before CTB, the Commonwealth Transportation Board, for final approval. So working as hard as we can, as fast as we can, getting through as many applications as we can to hopefully get some good funding out there for the state. So happy to answer any questions that might pop up though.
Any questions? Thank you. And next we have the Afton Express update, also with Danielle.
So I'll just give a short overview of the results of the Afton Express survey and the annual report that we compiled.
Focus on Zoom.
So we administer the Afton Express Rider Survey every year, and we encourage all of our riders to take it. It also is available to anyone to take. And this information really helps give us insight into the rider experience and helps give us data that we will use for future service decisions. So this year, the survey was open from December to January, and we asked questions about utilization, customer experience, barriers to access, and rider demographics. And we pair data from the survey with performance metrics for the annual report. And this year we had 80 participants take the survey, which was a record number, but 15 of those said they do not ride the Afton Express, so they will be excluded from a lot of the analysis, including the passenger profile. So in looking at who is riding the Afton Express, survey results were very consistent with previous years. It was more women than men. The majority were racially white, of typical working age, in the middle income brackets, both personally and as a household. And 98% of those surveyed own a vehicle or at least have access to one. And 98% of those, or 97%, are taking the Afton Express to and from work, so really reflecting the style of service. And when we look at how these individuals are riding, we see really a nice mix in the length of time. We're always happy to see a really nice number of riders who have been with us since the beginning, which of course is a testament to the value of the service. And not only do we have these loyal, steady riders, but you can kind of see a nice arc to the, like, a gradual gain in ridership. So as we continue to gain new ridership. And in terms of how many times a typical respondent rides, we see over half riding 3 to 4 days per week, with about a quarter riding a little less than that, and a quarter riding a little more than that. So how are these folks utilizing service? Most respondents, 95%, note that they ride from that east to west pattern, or the west to east pattern, so going from the Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro area to the Charlottesville, Albemarle area. And then there were a small number who said they do the reverse commute, so going from Charlottesville in the morning to the Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro area. And those we know mostly are overnight hospital workers. And as I'm sure most of you know, the Afton Express is designed on a trip system. So there are 4 trips in the morning, 5 in the evening and afternoon. And we asked in the survey what trips and stops participants used most often. We can see here the trip distribution numbers for both the morning and the PM. And based on our data in-house survey, these results do mirror what we know from our records through manual and mobile data collection. So for the AM, trip 4 is the most utilized, so that would mean you would get picked up at either the Stanton Crossing or the Waynesboro Parking ride lot at, let's see, 7:40 a.m. or 8 a.m., and then you would arrive at those two UVA stops at 8:32 and 8:36 a.m. For the evening trips, trip 2 is the most popular, so you'd get picked up from those two UVA stops at either 4:05 or 4:10. And you'd get dropped off at Stanton or Waynesboro at 4:45 or 5:08. So in the survey, we also asked individuals' motivations for riding the Afton Express. Some predictable themes came up, so economic reasons, environmental, quality of life factors. Most riders definitely gave a mix of reasons for why they ride. So many ride for all three of those reasons and others. But economic was by far the top motivation for riding, with the top three most popular answers being saving money on gas, car maintenance, and parking. In the annual report, we do break down cost savings in a few ways, but I wanted to include a simple, easy metric here. So when using the IRS standard mileage rate reimbursement, this includes gas, vehicle wear and tear, and a few other things. In 2024, this rate was 67 cents per mile. So when using this calculation, our average rider saved almost $8,000 in 2024 by choosing to ride the Afton Express rather than a personal vehicle. Additionally, many riders cited environmental reasons for why they ride, with 64% saying that's at least one of the reasons they choose to ride the Upton Express. And we also saw a lot of quality of time factors pop up. Regaining personal time was the second most popular reason for riding after those economic factors. And in questions where participants could write why they ride, multiple individuals commented that riding opened up employment opportunities, specifically in Charlottesville, with one rider saying that the Upton Express was the deciding factor in them even accepting a job at UVA. Many also commented on the decrease in stress without having to deal with traffic or in driving over Upton Mountain, in some cases 5 days a week, twice a day, being able to relax on the ride, catch up on work, also spend more quality time with their family because they're less stressed and tired when they get home. And many commented on how much they enjoy the community, with multiple respondents citing they have made friends from riding and that they love seeing the friendly drivers. So the impact on riders is really amazing to see, with both these concrete, tangible benefits, like the savings and the carbon emissions, but also in these less measurable benefits like the increase in well-being. And as far as numbers for the year, so this is from January 2024 to December 2024, we saw a 16% increase in ridership since last year, with a record number of over 19,000 passenger trips. So a really great year. We hope to see even more growth in 2025. As we have mentioned this meeting and previously, we did apply for a marketing grant that's specific to Upton Express. So we hope that will attract even more ridership. In the survey, we did ask how folks heard about the Upton Express, and 22% said through advertising. So we know that campaigns do work. We're also planning to add another trip. So with these changes, we do hope to keep expanding. And there are copies here, and we'll send everyone a PDF if you want to read it your own time and ask me. You can email me or call me with any questions. Also happy to answer any now.
Any questions?
I have a question. How were the riders able to submit their feedback?
Through a survey, we use SurveyMonkey, and we put it on all the buses, and we put it on social media.
That's pretty cool.
I think those are the only two avenues. Mm-hmm. Yes, but lots of participation this year.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Moving on to the contractor update, Steve.
Good afternoon, everybody. So the Upton Express was noted as having a modest increase over the last month is what we had for February. I'm not following along up here, am I?
No.
Good. Bright was kind of flat. It snowed a few days, and parking lots and whatnot were something as far as the service. For a Bright operational updates, we are seeking drivers. We hired three or four, and they've been flexing. They've been have some folks have been leaving. 5 years ago, they would have been 65, and now some of those folks are 70. So they think it's time to take a fishing and whatever. So we've got that going on. It certainly it isn't like it was when the pandemic was on, and we couldn't find anybody. So we've been fortunate. Equipment maintenance, mostly routine, brakes, oil changes, stuff of that nature, so that's been well. Transit Operator Appreciation Month celebration is March 18th, and there's supposed to be some kind of delivery over there for us, so we're also going to do something for the drivers, so they work really hard. It's easy to think that the bus just moves by itself, but it does not, so we certainly appreciate all of them that work for us and show up every day. And we have a couple signs, not sure if they're in place, I haven't been out to physically see them, but they're in process of being in place. So the Neighbors Bridge in Fishersville will be a new sign going up there, and a sign at Dayton Church will make it a permanent stop. So that's about all I have.
Any questions?
I will say that our team is never more appreciative of our drivers than when our team gets up at 4 in the morning to deliver donuts on Transit Operator Appreciation Day, and we recognize that they do that every day. So it's a definitely an eye-opening day and a great opportunity to celebrate all that they do for us.
Well, thank you.
Any questions?
I just have a comment. I hadn't ridden the bus for a couple, 3 months, and when I came back, it's interesting. The drivers are still as busy, but it doesn't seem like they're quite as stressed with the trying to meet the people's schedules. It just seems calmer.
You know, that's a great observation, and Steve can speak to it. So we've had a push over the last 4 to 6 months to tell our operators that even though you have a schedule, it is not set in stone, and you can be late, because if you're rushing and you're stressed, you'll have an accident, or you're going to get somebody that calls in on you, because you are a rolling billboard, and when the bright bus blows past you, it's a bad look for everyone. So we've been pushing that theme for the past 6 months, that the schedule, we're never early, we try to be on time, but we can be late. Don't sacrifice safety for the schedule. So that's a great observation that you've made, Vicki.
Oh, it was very obvious. Of course, this is not the bus, the 250 or
right.
any of those. This is just the ones that pick me up at my house.
And yeah, the paratransit also, we increased the third bus with a few additional hours during the peak hours. So that's probably helped a little bit too.
Great observation.
They've increased.
Yes, we're having a lot of demand, so we added a third bus during those peak hours.
Whoa,
it started
yeah.
with 2 yeah. hours of operation, now it's up to 4.
Yeah.
That seemed to
help, or maybe that's part of what's helped. I don't know.
Well, thank you for observing that.
but it was so clear, it was just very clear the difference. So, whatever's been done, it's been done well.
Okay, thank you. Next we have turnkey contract solicitation and technical assistance update from Paula.
Thank you. So we reported at the last VTAC meeting that we were underway in getting a consultant to help us with this procurement process that we'll be doing over the next year to procure a new contract for our turnkey service provider for Bright. We did end up settling with Kimley Horn for that. They've worked with us on a lot of these plans in the past, so we're excited about them and their insights and sharing that with us and helping us make sure that this is federally compliant, federally and state compliant, and that we get a competitive bid in for that contract. We held a kickoff meeting in January, and Jennifer is serving as the representative from the VTAC on that committee as a much smaller working group to work through the RFP development. But she's, you know, your interests as funding partners are being well represented in those conversations, and we, you know, keep working through that. We hope to get that out later this year. It's going to be a big project, but we feel like we've got a lot of good support from our consultants, and we'll make sure that all of our needs are covered in that RFP.
Any questions? Oh, okay. And since we now have a quorum, we can approve the minutes. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at those? We have a motion for approval. Motion for Paul. Do we have a second?
Second.
And vote. Yay?
Yay.
Any nays? Motion carries. Sorry. I'm new at this.
I'm just Allison did us all a huge favor by stepping up to be our chair today. So our chair was doing a great job.
I don't want to do introductions.
Very rare that you have a chair and co-chair both sit at the same time.
Okay, now we have other business, starting with the RAM clinic for 26.
Yes, so as you all might remember, back in 2024, we did a special one-day service to serve the RAM clinic, Remote Area Medical Clinic, at Augusta Expo, and so they reached out and they're going to be coming back in March of 2026. So if, with your blessing, we'll go forward and do that again and plan to meet the some needs, some transportation needs of the folks that utilize the clinic.
2026, not next month.
Okay.
Just want to make sure I'm following along.
Yes, next year. So with that extreme lead time, we'll be able to promote that special one-day service a lot more than we were able to do last year. So hopefully we'll be able to increase our service over to Augusta Expo.
And the next, Augusta Health Community Needs Assessment Survey?
Yes, Augusta Health isn't here, but they are doing their community health community needs assessment survey. And that is that survey is open through March 24th, so there are some flyers that you can take on your way out if you want to promote that survey. We've been promoting it a little bit on our social media, just because transportation usually becomes one of the top things that comes out of that needs assessment survey, so it's good for us to stay in tune with those results.
And then next, the PTASP update.
There are a lot of updates. I'll try to go through them pretty quickly. But our annual Public Transportation Agency Safety Plan, PTASP, went through our annual update. And so we had a few additional federal requirements that came through that we needed to update that. So the state created the statewide plan for, I believe it's 15 agencies that receive 5307 funds. They developed that in 2020, so every year we're responsible for that update. It basically is a document that serves to show, document BRT and CSPDC's ways of safety, just to have it all in one space for our safety management systems. So we went through that update, and it will go before the Board of Commissioners at their April meeting, and it went before frontline staff, which is one of those requirements, at their March safety meeting.
Okay, thank you. And then the continuous writing policy.
Yes, BRT recently brought up some continuing writing challenges that they've had with folks just getting on the bus and staying on the bus throughout the day, so we did take a look at some of other transit agencies' procedures on that, and they do have a non-continuous loop riding policy. So we'll start to implement that just in the rules of riding, and we'll do some further research, and if it seems that best practices are to develop a formal policy, we can develop that and take it to you to your next the next meeting, just to have something to point to that. And Harrisonburg, Fredericksburg, and Lynchburg all have those policies on, and Charlottesville all have it. So you only take that one loop, then you do have to disembark the bus, and then you'll have to wait for the next loop that comes around. So it's just eliminating that continuous riding all day.
Okay, and then finally, the Afton Express schedule.
Sure, I'll take that one. So we, as Danielle alluded to in her presentation, we have been looking to add another trip to the Afton Express, either in the morning or the afternoon, wherever we were seeing the greatest demand. And we were fortunate that we got funding through DRPT to add those hours. But when we got down to looking at the schedule and trying to figure out where that demand was most prevalent and where we could fit a bus, those things did not match up very well. We do have the capacity in our third bus that's in service that starts with the fifth loop in the evening to add a front leg to that so that it's doing two trips just like every other bus is. But trying to fit that trip at the beginning of that and wedge it in between the existing schedule didn't seem to be the best approach. We talked to our VRT operators and supervisors, and they acknowledged that there's some underutilized trips and then some that are really popular, and then we have demand in times that are not being currently provided. So we're gonna throw the schedule up in the air and see what happens. We've tried to figure out how we could make adjustments within the existing confines of the schedule, and it's just really difficult because of those domino effects, with moving one bus means that the next trip starts too late or too early. So we are going to work with a consultant from our on-call program to take a look at that schedule, get some updated data from major employers in Charlottesville and Augusta County and Stanton Waynesboro that are on the route, find out what their work schedules are, and find out what the greatest need points would be from both them and the survey data that we collect, and have a consultant analyze all of that information and come up with some recommendations on what a new schedule would look like. The hope is that we can retain all of the existing service times that are working for people and then add in those new times that we're hearing requests for without losing any passengers or having kind of a domino effect. So we're hoping to do that pretty quickly. We want to have something in place by this fall. Usually at the beginning of the academic year, late August, early September is when we start to see new riders coming on board. So having a new schedule ready by then would be great. It's a little ambitious, but this would all be within the resources that we currently have. We wouldn't be adding any service that would be beyond the bus capacity that we currently have, so no additional costs there for another vehicle. But trying to find a sweet spot where we can serve as many people as possible and get them to work a little closer to the time they want to be there, knowing that's you know, the primary reason that people ride the Afton Express. So we'll work with a consultant on that. In order to meet our aggressive timeline, we would likely need to bring a kind of a template of the schedule to the BTAC in May to review, and then put it out for public comment so that we could get feedback in time to then implement those changes by the end of August. If we make a change of more than 20% of our route, we're required to put it out for public comment, but we think this needs to go out regardless of the percentage of change because it's important that we get this right. But that would push us pretty close up to when we need to be printing new brochures and schedules and getting it out there. So if that timeline is too aggressive and it doesn't end up working out for that time, we will push it back a little to make sure that we get the most comprehensive update. We want to do this one time, get it right, and have it be a good set schedule that gives us opportunities to plug and play in the future for other options. So stay tuned for that. We'll come to you with some drafts when we have them, and hopefully we can find a win for everybody.
Thank you. And then next, because I forgot to do it at the beginning, we're going to do a round of introductions. There's some new people here today. So I'll start. I'm Allison Pelmarge. I'm a city planner with Waynesboro.
Hi, I'm Amanda Kaufman, assistant city manager for Stanton.
Brian Bourne, town manager, Dayton.
Jessica Davis, I'm with Aetna Better Health.
Rodney Rose, director of community development, city of Stanton.
Caitlin Savage, planner for Augusta County.
Jennifer Wetzel, deputy county administrator for Augusta.
Carl Terry, transit rider.
I'm Melissa Walker, I'm the director of public safety at Blue Ridge Community College.
Becky Messer, I'm a rider, I guess. I live in Stanton. And would have loved to have had the bus when I was actually working for 30 years and didn't have one.
Phil Thompson, director of operations for Virginia Regional Transit.
I'm Steve Wilson. I'm something. Transit manager for Brighton. I work for Virginia Regional Transit.
Zach Beard. I work here at the CSPDC and also staff the Stanton Augusta Waynesboro Metropolitan Planning Organization, SAWMPO.
Hi, I'm Danielle Gannon. I'm a transit planner here at the CSPDC.
Paula Malister, the director of transportation here at the CSPDC.
And Devin Thompson, transit program manager at the CSPDC.
Do we want anyone on Zoom to introduce themselves? Or?
Jennifer, we'll start with you since you'll be Augusta County's new representative in the future.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Brown. I am the library director for Augusta County Libraries.
She what? I'm sorry?
Director of Libraries.
Okay.
Darren?
I am Darren Smith, the director of the Stanton Downtown Development Association.
Oh. Anne?
Good afternoon, Ann Cundy with Central Shenandoah Planning District Commission.
Van Gierth.
Gierth Bartholomew, Transportation Planner with Central Shenandoah Planning District.
And Kyle.
Good afternoon, everyone. Sorry, my camera's not working, but I am Kyle Fussell. I'm with the Department of Rail and Public Transportation in Richmond. I'm one of our transit program managers.
And then Tyler, Zadie, and Kunamardi introduce themselves. And Alex?
Alex Wilmer, Assistant Town Manager for the Town of Bridgewater.
And is that it?
That's it.
Well, thank you all. Yeah, we just have a few new faces, so.
Yeah, thank you all for introducing yourselves. I know many of you know each other already, but we are really excited to have expanded this group and to continue welcoming new people from new organizations and localities to join us and participate in the planning process for BRITE. So thanks for being here today.
And with that, so the next meeting is scheduled for May 14th, 2025, but due to things that need be voted on,
like the schedule, Paula kind of just mentioned.
There will be a poll sent out to alter that meeting date, perhaps to May 21st or June 11th. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
And with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Awesome.